Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right. Thank you so much for staying with us. And we're into our health feature. Today, we are going to have a family meeting, okay? No one's judging. No one's here to call you names or anything. It's a very, very important conversation. We are here to partner with you. We're here to walk this journey together. And it's a simple question. I asked Rufilo, my colleague, earlier on, how do you know if you're an alcoholic? How do you know? Well, my guest this evening is founder of Tribe Sober, Janet. How is it? Janet Gorant. Janet, thanks for making time for us. Good evening. And thank you so much for being with us here on Point of View.
Good evening. Thank you for inviting me to your family meeting.
Well, you are steering this family meeting, Janet, so we really rely on you to walk us through this path. Janet, a very simple question. How would I know if I'm an alcoholic?
Oh, there's some signs. Let me give you some. I think drinking alone is a bit of a worrying sign. And also drinking more than the low risk limits. The low risk limits, just to clarify, are about a bottle and a half of wine a week, not a night, a week, and maybe six or seven beers. So it's very low, because so much research has now shown the damage that alcohol does to our bodies and our brains. So really, it should be treated with caution. So if you're drinking more than that every week, and if I think the real giveaway is if you try to drink less and you can't. I mean, I spent 10 years trying to cut down my alcohol consumption because I couldn't imagine having none. So I would try to cut it down year after year, and I just couldn't do it. And many people are like that. And once we've crossed the line into dependence, there's no going back, really. We have to quit. And surprisingly, it's easier to quit completely than to cut down, because once we're dependent, we can't cut down.
So if you are someone, as you said, perhaps you drink every day after a difficult days, after a difficult work day, and you come home, and how you sort of relax is your glass of wine, you, or maybe your two or three or a bottle. But you are completely functional the following day. Is that a problem?
Oh, yes. It is, because the world is full of functioning alcoholics. I know, because I was one. And it still means that we're drinking far too much and that we're harming our health. I used to drink a bottle of wine every night, and more at the weekends. And it was harming my health. I mean, I had breast cancer. They've now proved that alcohol is linked to seven types of cancer and more than 60 diseases. So a bottle in a night is not on. If you can manage to have, I don't know, maybe four or five glasses of wine a week, then that's absolutely fine. You know, it's very unlikely to do you any harm. But anything more than that, and you really are putting your health and your mental health at risk. It causes so much anxiety. Drinking alcohol is like pouring gasoline on your anxiety. It really is.
There is the what some call the 11-year effect. And I think you just touched on it a little bit, that you tried to cut down yourself for about 10 years, and that was impossible. Maybe expand on that. What is that 11-year effect?
Sure. Well, that came out of a study that was done by an American sobriety group called The Tempest. And what they did is they asked hundreds of people in recovery. They asked them one question. They said, how long was it between the moment that you knew you had a drinking problem and the moment that you reached out for help? And the average time was 11 years. Because there's a lot of shame around not being able to control your alcohol intake, especially for women. So we tend to struggle along on our own because we don't want to reach out for help, whereas that is absolutely the key, just to reach out and find a group and get some help.
And why is the group so vital in the journey of recovery of sobriety?
Well, there's huge support. I mean, I run a group, as you probably know, Tribe Sober, and we have people at all stages of the journey. So we've got brand new people that are joining us that don't know anything and they need a lot of support. And then we've got people that are 6 months sober. We've got people that are a year or two sober. People like myself, I'm nearly 10 years sober. So we all support each other, and there's such a lovely connection because we understand the struggle and we've all had the same struggle. So we're not afraid to be vulnerable. We're not afraid to be honest with each other, and that creates a bond. So community is everything.
You've just said, you know, you've been sober for 10 years. Is every day a struggle, Janet?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Mm. Having this problem and solving it is the best thing that ever happened to me. Mm. And we actually say in our community that we're the luckiest, you know, because we were forced to a crisis. So what we did is we had to change our lives drastically and then rebuild them. And many, many people in our community have built a beautiful alcohol-free life that they love. That is much, much better than the previous life they had. So no, it's absolutely not a struggle to answer your question. Mm. And we differ very much from AA, who do tend to imply it's a lifetime struggle and you have to go to meetings forever.
Yes.
But we say 3 months of doing the work and being in the community, and you can change your behavior. And after that, it's all about building a life you don't want to escape from, building an alcohol-free life that you love. And it's possible, believe me.
Yeah. Can we talk to some of the health risks? Because, you know, as you were saying earlier, some cancers, some studies have shown that they are directly linked to alcohol abuse. And maybe let's give a sense of what kind of health risks one is likely facing when you are abusing alcohol?
Well, the cancer is obviously a fairly drastic one. And there's evidence that the whole of our digestive tract, so as we're drinking the alcohol, you know, and it goes down to our stomach. So we've got mouth cancer, throat cancer, esophagus cancer, all those nasty ones, and breast cancer as well. So the cancer is a big one, and there is so much evidence now. And in Canada, where they've done a lot of research, they've now reduced the low-risk limits of alcohol, the recommendations, to just 2 drinks a week, because the evidence is out there and it's so compelling. And people don't know this. And I've been on a mission to try and get that evidence out there, because it's almost been a cover-up, if I can use that word. In 1988, the World Health Organization put out a report that alcohol was a carcinogen, that it caused cancer. And that's been kept under wraps for many, many years now. And gradually, I do feel that it's coming out into the public domain. And I think alcohol eventually will go the same way as cigarettes. You know, it won't be seen as a norm to smoke. And these days, if you do smoke, you know, or if you give up smoking, rather, people tend to say, well done. But if you say you've given up drinking, people say, what?
Shame.
Anyone that's given up or taken a break will know that alcohol is the only drug you have to justify not taking.
You're boring. Loosen up a little bit. Yeah. Oh, come on. All of those things where it makes it, I'm sure, quite difficult for someone who's trying to sober up when you're in social circles where everybody says, oh, just one, man. It's, you know, it's not going to harm you and all of that. It must be quite a thing being, you know, in a social setting where people, as you said, society thinks this is cool. Society has made this out to be quite beautiful, quite sexy and all of that. And it just give me a sense of what it must be like for someone who's trying to go stay sober.
Yeah, I mean, we have a double whammy, really, because we have the liquor industry who spend trillions on advertising. So the marketing makes it look sexy and glamorous, as you say. You can't watch a movie without seeing the heroine with a huge glass of wine or the guy, you know, with a glass of whiskey. So it's absolutely everywhere. It's been totally normalized. And then, of course, you've got the peer pressure, which you're talking about. So it, you get asked, you know, well, why aren't you drinking? Have one, just have one. And it is really difficult because when we first give up, we feel very fragile, you know, and vulnerable. And I advise people, certainly for the first couple of weeks, just to stay home, you know, don't put yourself through that. And gradually you'll have more confidence. And it's important to have some tools, you know, say, people will ask you, why aren't you drinking? So you need to have a reason ready, which is ridiculous, but you do. It'll take the pressure off you. So I advise people to keep it light, you know, just say, oh, I've taken a break from alcohol for a few weeks now and I'm feeling great. I'm feeling much better. I'm sleeping better. So I'm going to keep it going just for a bit longer. You know, everyone's on a health kick these days and you can't do anything better for your health than taking a break from alcohol. You don't have to say that you've got a drinking problem, that you've given up forever, because then people will pile in and they'll say, you haven't got a problem. You drink just like me. They've probably got a problem as well.
Jenica Ryant is my guest, founder of Tribe Sober. We're going to talk a little bit more about what they do at Tribe Sober. And listen, give us a call, 086-000-0959. You can also send a voice note on 063-688-0959. As I said earlier, it's a safe space. Are you struggling? Are you struggling to give up alcohol? Are you maybe not sure? Maybe you feel like you are almost there or you're heading that way. Let's talk about some of the difficulties that you're facing. Janet's here to help and we'll give you more details about what they do at Tribe Sober. So give us that call on 086-000-0959. Yeah. Jenica Grant is my guest, founder of Tribe Sober. We're speaking about alcohol dependency. A good time for you to call in, 086-000-0959. If you are on your journey to sobriety, you're very welcome to give us a call. If you are struggling, if you're not sure, if you think maybe you are now an alcohol dependent person and you are not sure and you want to check, this is a good time to call. Janet will help us through it. You can send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. Janet, I want us to talk about how alcohol affects the brain. Because for some time, people feel happy. And maybe explain that to us, whether it is happy that they're feeling. You know, that feeling where It's a joyous thing to it's just a part of celebration and people feel happy and they say that they feel that their problems melt away and all of that, which I suspect is part of the reason why people go back. What actually happens there? What's this thing that they're feeling when they think alcohol makes them happy?
Yeah, well, it does certainly have an effect on our brain. In fact, if we are dependent and we drink for years, then alcohol actually rewires our brain, which is a bit scary. But to think about the immediate effect, because of the blood sugar level, it gives us that kind of buzz, doesn't it? And that's what we love. Us drinkers, we chase that buzz. And what happens when you're dependent is you'll have a drink and the buzz comes along. And that buzz, they have researched it now because of the blood alcohol level. It lasts for 20 minutes. That's all it lasts. And then you're dropped down lower than you were when you had that drink. So, of course, what do? You go and get another drink. And that's how it happens. And that's how we end up, you know, having 6-7 drinks when a non-dependent person would have one or two. And then, you know, they'd either switch to soft drinks or they'd stop drinking. So that's what it does to us. It takes us up. There's a kind of biphasic effect. Takes us up and then it drops us down again. And it drops us down quite low. I mean, I would often finish a night of drinking in tears, you know, and I know many people that do. Or maybe you go to bed and you go to sleep or pass out or whatever. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning, many drinkers all wake up absolutely racked with anxiety because that's when the alcohol is leaving their system. So that might happen. That's another way that you come down. And then in the morning, you might have the hangover. Or, of course, blackouts. I used to get blackouts, and they were scary. And I've talked to doctors and scientists about blackouts, and they've told me that when we have a blackout, our brain is so soaked in alcohol that we can't make memories. Mm. It's not that we've forgotten stuff, but we can't actually make memories in the first place. And I found that so scary. And, you know, if you really have a lot of blackouts, you're putting yourself at risk of permanent brain damage.
Let's talk about what you do at Tribe Sober.
Sure, yes. Well, I founded Tribe Sober when I was about a year sober. And the reason that I did it was because I was so happy and to be alcohol free. I felt like I had been let out of jail, and I felt so healthy and full of energy. And I became quite passionate about sobriety, and I wanted to help other people to do what I'd done. So I began by running a few workshops. I used, because my professional background is in corporates as an HR director. So I used to run lots of training programs, design programs, run them and do lots of executive coaching. So I've transferred those skills that I picked up in corporate life to Tribe Sober. So I began by running workshops. I ran them in Joburg, Cape Town and London as well. And then eventually people that were coming to the workshops, they say, you know, we want more. We want to stay in touch with you and other people that we meet, and we want more content so that we can really change our lives. So that's when we started a membership. So now we've got a membership with about 400 members from all over the world, actually. And they're all encouraging and supporting each other. And I explained, you know, the benefits of community, didn't I? So we have a WhatsApp group. We've got 3 Zoom meetings a week, and that's how it stays together. But I also have a podcast, a free podcast that comes out every Saturday. It's Tribe Sober. It's on Apple and Spotify, and that's absolutely free. And it's either recovery stories. I either interview someone that has given up alcohol, or I interview doctors or scientists or someone that's written a book about alcohol-related stuff. So, yeah, that's what we do. And we run a 3-month intensive program as well called Breaking Free. So if anyone wants to know more, they just go to tribesober.com and it's all there.
Mm. How did your own personal story with alcohol begin?
Oh, well, I'm fairly typical, actually, in that I began drinking late teens. And then in my 20s and 30s, it was very much a social thing. I was okay. I mean, I would have the odd binge, the odd blackout, but it was more or less in control. And then in my 40s, I became a mom and did the kind of working mother thing. And I had quite a responsible job, and I just found the strain of being a working mother turned that alcohol use from socializing into self-medication. Mm. So I would get home from work and the bottle of wine would be open before I got my coat off sometimes. Mm. And I would work my way through that bottle in the evening. Mm. And it was only in my 50s when I thought, well, I got breast cancer. So I thought, you know, I've really got to cut down on my drinking. Mm. And it was when I tried to do that, that I realized I was completely dependent. Mm. So then I had to find a way to do this thing because I had no idea. So I went to AA because that's all I knew about. But I just didn't like to label myself an alcoholic at the beginning of every meeting. Mm. And it didn't work for me. I mean, AA works for many, many people, but it didn't work for me. It wasn't my thing. And interestingly, the groups that I went to here in South Africa, I went to quite a few just trying to find my people. But it was quite male orientated. And a lot of these guys, you know, they were quite far down the road. They were drinking in the morning. Some of them had lost their jobs and, you know, broken up with their families because of the alcohol. And I would actually leave a meeting thinking, well, I'm not as bad as they are. Mm. I'm not that bad, which was completely counterproductive because I was bad. I was drinking far too much. Mm. So we actually say to people, don't compare yourself with the real hardcore alcoholic. You know, don't think about that homeless man in the park clutching his bottle of whiskey, because you shouldn't compare yourself with something like that. You should compare yourself with the best version of yourself that you can possibly be, because it's very counterproductive to look at a bunch of super heavy drinkers and think, well, I don't drink as much as they are. And if your drinking's on your mind, you're drinking too much. But yeah, to go back to my story, I went to AA. That didn't work. Eventually, I found a one-day workshop in London where I went to, and that did work. And it worked because there were other people there, women like me that, you know, had good jobs, nice families, drinking a bottle of wine a night, knowing it wasn't sustainable, all sorts of health issues arising. So we learned some tools on that day for behaviour change. And then we all swapped numbers, had a WhatsApp group, and we talked to each other every single day for months. And I'm still in touch with some of those people. And that was what did it. It was the community and the connection. And connection is the opposite of addiction. And that's what people need to do. They mustn't hide away on their own and worry about it. They need just to reach out. There's so many online groups these days. There's so much help out there.
We don't often speak of your loved ones, people around you. So we obviously spend a lot of time, you know, talking about the person who is trying to give up alcohol or who's struggling with, alcohol dependency. But there's a lot that happens with people around someone like that, isn't there?
Yes. I mean, it's very damaging for the family, the immediate family. And we have every Saturday, we have this thing that we call a Zoom cafe, and we have a speaker. And this speaker, actually, she was one of our tribe. And she came, she did a talk about how alcohol had affected her children. And her children were teenagers now. And she was about a year sober. And she was always worried about how it had affected them when they were younger. So she sat down with each of them alone, you know, each of the three of them, and she had quite a deep conversation about how it had affected them. And they all said, you know, that they quite liked the kind of fun mum, you know, the tipsy mum that would laugh and make lots of jokes. But then she would cross over, as we all do when we've had too much, and, you know, she would be not fun anymore. She'd be aggressive or crying or difficult. And they said they absolutely hated that. So it certainly affects everybody around you. And my own son as well, he tells me that we only talk about it now that I am sober, but he says that he just hated my drinking years, and he's so glad that they're over now. So kids really, really pick it up and they watch. And of course, we need to role model a healthy lifestyle to our children if we can, because they pick it all up. And if they see you drinking when you're stressed, they'll think, oh, well, that must be a coping mechanism. That's how I'm going to cope if I get problems. And another good thing about changing your relationship with alcohol when you've got children is it opens a dialogue. You can start talking to them, because it's no good you telling your teenagers that they mustn't go out and get completely hammered with the alcohol night after night. If that's what you're doing, they're not going to take you seriously.
So there are people who would say, you know, I've attempted to do this and I can't. I cannot do it. I've tried. What are some of the mistakes people make when they're trying to get sober?
Yeah, I would say to people like that, first of all, never give up. You know, keep trying, because it is something really hard to do. But keep trying and never give up. And we've got a lady in our community, and in her first year with us, she had 84 day ones, but she never gave up. You know, she would fall off the bus, as we call it, our sober bus, and then she would get back on, because that's the thing on when you've got all these groups, you just say, oh, God, I really messed up last night. But everybody piles in and they say, don't beat yourself up. Just get right back on the bus, because if you don't have people telling you that, you think, oh God, I've had a drink, so I might as well, I'll never do this, so I might as well carry on drinking. So you give up far too easily. You need an accountability group.
The ever so trendy now, alcohol-free alcohol, if you know what I mean, gins, yes, the beers, the, and so on, the spirits, do they work? Is it a good way to try and wean yourself off the real alcohol?
I think so, because when I gave up 10 years ago, there was nothing. So that made me even more grumpy when I was going out trying to cope in the early days, because I either had to have water or Coke or something. But there's so many alcohol-free drinks. And in fact, we've got an online store in... it's in Cape Town, called, yes, Drink Nil, yes, and they've got more than 100 choices, and they'll deliver them to your house. And yeah, I mean, my favorite drink, even though I was never a beer drinker, but I love the alcohol-free beers because they're just delicious. And the bubbly is nice. I don't like the wines very much, the red, white, and white wine. They just
juice. They're just juice. They're just sparkling, yeah, juice. I mean, we were speaking a little bit earlier about, you know, one's journey, and is it not that everybody's journey is different? You know, you may struggle with the bottle. Someone else may struggle with just one glass. But that one glass is a glass they have to have every single day. And it's important for us to note that, you know, all of us are different, and how our bodies react to alcohol is very different.
Yes, absolutely. But I would say if you really can stop after one glass, then you probably don't have a problem. There's a saying that we use, and we say, if you can't have one, have none. And it's so much easier just to quit. I wish somebody had told me that before I spent 10 years, you know, trying and failing to moderate, to drink sensibly. Because you stop, and it's really hard, I would never say otherwise, for 3 months. And then it's done. And then you can use all that energy that you spent trying to control your drinking. You can direct that to other projects, creating a completely different life, as many people have.
I've got a call here, Janet, from George, who's also actually a colleague of ours, who's got a question. Hi, George.
Hey, how's it, ladies? Good.
Good, good, good. Welcome.
Yeah, so the first question, there are two questions. One, I don't know if they're scientifically based or what, but the first question is, when we talk about alcoholism, Is it all types of alcohol, any type, can get you, you know, hooked on this kind of illness?
Janet?
I'm sorry, George, I didn't quite get that question.
Okay, there are different types of alcohol. You know, there's beer, there's whiskey.
Okay.
Yeah, so alcoholism, can you get it from any of these, or does the type of drink really matter?
Well, it's all ethanol, really, George. It's all, whatever you're drinking, you know, whether it's whiskey or wine, and it's about quantity as well. So if you drink steadily, in fact, the science tells us that it takes about 18 years of daily drinking to become dependent. And it doesn't really matter what that alcohol is. Even if, you know, it's 2-3 glasses of wine every night, if you do that year after year, you're very likely to become dependent.
Makes sense. Second question, it's based on my experience. I've drank only 3 times in my life. So this second time I drank was a deliberate one, because I failed dismally at some audition that I was doing in radio. And then I decided, okay, you know what, maybe let me just try this whole notion of drink to forget. So I went out and I got 2 6-packs recommended by this lady at the shop. And I went through the first 6, nothing happened. I went through the next 2. So all in all, 8 in a row. And I wasn't getting drunk. Instead, I found myself talking a whole lot more, and I was getting upset that I'm not getting drunk. So, you know, eventually I just talked my head off and you know, until I got tired. And that's what got me into bed, you know. And, yeah, I had the headache the next morning. And this aftertaste that I couldn't brush off with any kind of toothpaste, yeah. So I decided, no, alcohol is not my thing. But it got me thinking, as I'm listening to you, I said, great opportunity for me to ask you, how come I never got drunk? Is that, do you know of such? Yeah. Instead, I couldn't stop talking.
Well, that is a sign of being drunk, probably. what were you talking about? Were you telling the same story over and over again?
And I was making a whole lot of sense. I was just, you know, hunting on about how these people need me on radio, you know, and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was all...
maybe it made sense to you,
George. You had a hangover the next morning.
I definitely had the headache and the aftertaste that is so horrible, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very impressive that you've only drunk 3 times in your life. Are you going to drink again?
Never.
Good. Very sensible.
Thanks, George. Really appreciate that. Janet, let me just take a quick break, if you don't mind. And I'm going to take more of those calls coming through on 086-000-00959. I'm with the founder of Tribe Sober, Janet Garant, who's on the line with us just to help us navigate alcohol dependency. Ndateselvi, good evening and welcome.
Hi, Pamela, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, Ndateselvi?
I'm blessed beyond measure.
Excellent.
Yes. Pamela, I'd like to know as to, can a person be alcoholic if he is drinking only three days in a week, maybe Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
How much is that drink per week?
I was drinking a bottle every day. Bottle of whiskey.
Sure. Janet?
750.
750.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid it's down to the quantity, isn't it? If you were going to say you have, you know, 2 glasses of wine 3 times a week, then okay. But it sounds like, I mean, you are binge drinking. And I know that's quite a pattern here at the weekends, isn't it? The binge drinking. It's even worse than drinking every night moderately, because what happens is your liver is getting damaged by all that whiskey, and you probably feel okay by about, I don't know, Tuesday, Wednesday in the week, because you've got over that, and then you're ready for the next weekend to start again. But the thing is, your liver isn't ready. That damage will be at least a month or 6 weeks. So I'd really advise you to try and cut down on that binge drinking.
No, I stopped since 2009 up to now.
Oh, wonderful.
You've stopped?
Yeah, he's stopped.
Fantastic.
No, fantastic. Thank you, Dr. Selby. Well done.
Thank you.
Janet, all these... all these, you know, remedies, drink a glass of water in between every glass of alcohol, do they help?
Well, I used to try to do that sort of thing, and maybe you don't feel quite so dreadful the next day if you can manage to get some water down as well. But alcohol is so dehydrating. Mm. Did you know that for every glass of wine we drink, we rob our body of about 4 glasses of wine? Four glasses of water. It just really dehydrates us. And that's why when we do stop, I mean, there's so many health benefits. And also you look better as well, because your skin immediately becomes more hydrated. And within 2-3 weeks, we see people looking so different. We ask people to take a selfie when they join us, and then we ask them to do another one after about 6 weeks. And we've got some fantastic transformations. Mm.
I've heard, and I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know, but these other remedies that help people to stop, are there drugs that absolutely work, or vitamin concoctions that absolutely work to assist people to stop?
Well, I know that there's some drugs. There's one called Antabuse, which you have to get prescribed from a doctor, And that will actually make you feel so ill if you do have a drink. Mm. That's the idea, you know, it's kind of aversion therapy. But the trouble is, if you're really hooked on alcohol, you will try and drink through that pain. And I'm afraid some people have died because of that. Mm. There's a famous footballer, I mean, it's long time ago now, but he was called George Best, and that's how he met his demise, you know. And it was such a waste because he was a young and talented person. But I'm trying to think of what the other one's called. There's another one that is supposed to it takes away the buzz. Mm. So you can be drinking away and you'll feel nothing. Mm. I mean, what is the point of that? Because the alcohol's still damaging your system. So I think they're best avoided, these things, because what you need to do is change your behavior, and it is possible. And then you don't have to take more drugs to eradicate the drug that is alcohol.
Janet, I really appreciate you taking the time. How do people get hold of you? How do people get hold of Tribe Sober?
Just go to the website, tribesober.com, and then they'll see, there'll be a little WhatsApp button somewhere there so they can message me directly. But do check out the podcast. That's absolutely free. And there's about 250 episodes out now. So you can learn everything you want to learn about alcohol.
Janet Grant, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for walking us through this little journey. Appreciate it. Founder of Tribe Sober. So it's Tribe Sober, and the podcast is absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Janet. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.